The Marching Roundtable is proud to be an official media partner of Drum Corps International and Music for All.
And I was attending, you know, Arizona State on a full ride saxophone scholarship, so I could play at a high level, but band for me was far more a social experience than anything else, right? The place where you belong. And I yeah. wanted everyone to belong. And he was, you know, always pushing like the aesthetic. And I'm like, I don't even care. Like, you know, being good is yeah. really fun and that will come. But if you're safe and you have friends and you can be your weird you and, you know, your band is your place, music is your place. And so for me, that's where United Sound comes from, is like, how do we make it so everybody fits?
That's Julie Duty of United Sound, and she's one of four music educators on this podcast who talk about practical ways to include disabled students in our music programs. The conversation is based on product-based versus social-based music education, and how we can balance these two things to serve our students the best. This is an excerpt of an hour-long webinar that you can find at marchingartseducation.com. There's a link to that webinar where this podcast is located at the Marching Roundtable website and YouTube channel. Thank you to the sponsor of this podcast, Fred J. Miller Incorporated, found at fjminc.com. We can include every student, and there are amazing music educators out there sharing resources and information to make it possible. Four of them are on this podcast. I'm sure you'll find this conversation very inspiring. Hey, everybody, this is Tim Hinton, the Beast of the Marching Arts. What an interesting conversation we have tonight. We are talking about working with students with disabilities in our music programs, specifically product-based versus social-based music education. This is an offshoot from a previous webinar that we did with Dr. Tina Holmes Davis, who's here again tonight. Tina, how are you?
I'm well. Thank you. I'm excited to be here. Sorry.
Yeah, thank you for coming back again. Of course, you teach at Georgia College and State University. Thank you so much for coming back for another conversation about this important topic. Also here tonight, Dr. David Knapp, who teaches at the University of Nebraska at Kearney. David, how are you?
I'm super. Thank you very much for having me.
So glad that you are here. Jay Davis is with us. Jay, you teach at your band director at Houston County yes. High School in Georgia. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me tonight.
Thank you for being here to represent the high school band director in the ways that you're approaching this in your classroom. I think it's going to be really, really interesting. And then Julie Duty is with us. Of course, Julie is the founder and executive director of United Sound. Julie, thank you so much for taking time to be here with us tonight.
Thank you for the invitation.
So glad that you're here. So all these very, very interesting different perspectives that we're going to have for this conversation. Let's go back around and I'll just let you each do a brief introduction beyond what I've already said. Dr. Tina Holmes Davis, why don't you go first?
Hi, I'm Tina and I'm a stroke survivor. And that's really how I got into this whole conversation, is because now in order to make music, I have to make music in the exceptional way that other people make music, not the way that everybody makes music. So it's important to me that the people who don't get to everybody music now get to everybody music.
I love that. Thank you. I'm Dr. David Knapp. Could you introduce yourself?
I'm David Knapp. I am also a stroke survivor. 24 years ago, I had a major stroke when I was 37, just by bad luck primarily. It was confounding to all my physicians and there were no answers medically except you're going to have to deal with paralysis the rest mm-hmm. of your life. And to my great fortune, I worked together with an instrument builder here in Nebraska to build a saxophone that can be played with just one hand. And it's been extremely successful. And I'm still a saxophone player. I just do it a little differently than I used to. And it's still a blast. My great love.
Outstanding.
Fantastic. Such an interesting thing. Thank you for being here to be a part of the conversation. So Jay, if you'd introduce yourself, please.
I'm Jay Davis. I serve as director of bands at Houston County High School in Warner Robins. It's my ninth year there and my 22nd year in public education. I have a lot of different angles that I approach this from. First of all, I am very blessed to be married to Dr. Tina Holmes Davis. So I see all the things that she's dealt with since we went through her stroke and and all of the things that she's done to advocate for inclusivity in music. But even before that, I've always found ways to make sure music is accessible for all of my students at every school that I've taught at. And I think it's very important. I spend a lot of time with my program talking about relationship over rehearsal, that not necessarily the most important outcome of what we do is the performance, but it's about the relationships we build and the community and the culture that we have. And for me, that's one that includes everybody. I'm just really honored to be here, happy to speak on the topic, share what limited experience I have, but it really is an honor to be here.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. I appreciate you bringing that perspective. Thanks for, I was going to do the full disclosure thing to make sure everybody knew that you were here as part of that family, but love to have the high school band director's perspective. And Julie, everybody probably knows who you are, but if you'll introduce yourself, please.
I'm Julie Duty. I'm the founder and executive director of United Sound. Our work focuses primarily on helping music teachers to include students with intellectual and developmental disabilities, so the students that would be in your special education department at your high school, in band and orchestra and guitar, instrumental music.
Wonderful. Well, thank you for all the good work that you're doing. So if you haven't, if you're watching to this or listening to this and you haven't seen the webinar that we already did with Tina, there's a link where this is, and I hope that you will go and check that out, because Tina, that was so, so interesting. Most exciting part to me was when you showed us your one-handed adaptive clarinet and showed us how you play it. And I'm so super impressed with that. It was so, so interesting and inspiring to me. One of the topics that we had during that conversation was this thing about the issue of product-based versus social-based in music education classroom. And as a former band director, I thought this was very, very interesting, because I was one of those people that had a lot of pressure to make sure that that concert was as perfect as possible and all of that stuff that we talked about before. So I said, let's talk about this further. You got this wonderful group together. So Tina, why don't you start by saying why you wanted to have this group and how you would like to jump off from that.
All right. So I think that I may have put Dr. Nabb in a weird position, because he did write, he's a contributing author for a text that I have coming out in the fall, and he did address the idea of product versus social-based music, but that's not his original idea. So we, Dr. Nabb and I have both been kind of building off this, and Dr. Nabb, would you say that's David Elliott, or who would you say started that idea, or most recently?
A lot of people are talking about it now. My thinking dates back to Christopher Small, and his book Musicking. He wrote several in the 90s when I was just finishing my PhD. Fabulous writer, and he was talking about the social aspect of music, and so music, sociology of music, more or less. And since then, it's increasing numbers of people are talking about it. Mm-hmm. Elliot among them, I have some notes. I'm sorry.
You're doing great. Actually, I was going to ask you if you would share your experience with the disability ensemble, that you kind of opened your eyes to the idea that performance might not be the only outcome.
Yeah, well, it was difficult for me to turn the corner. Yes. I lost my mind. It doesn't matter. I had grown up and been educated in the performance-based philosophy, and did my bachelor's and master's degree in performance, and my professional life was all built on performance until suddenly I was dealing with paralysis and had a very uncertain future, and I faced a personal crisis, because everything was upside down, and I felt like I was in the wrong place at the wrong time, so I started to learn and talk to people and go to various events, and I was at an event in Bristol, England, mm-hmm. in geez, I don't remember, about 2013 or so, there was a group of young people with many different kinds of disabilities, often multiple disabilities, including cognitive and physical impairments. And they were interacting, and they were laughing, and they were communicating with each other, and the crowd was involved, and the crowd was laughing and shocked and applauding all together at various times. It was just amazing. And it sounds, if you had recorded it, it might have sounded like a preschool before the teacher got there. It was just kind of some screaming and some crashing and some banging and some sounds that you could recognize as instruments, but they were playing on all kinds of electronic and acoustical instruments. It was a fascinating experience, and I thought, man, this is incredible. Something's going on here, and I don't know what it is. And then I had to go home and think about it for a while. And this guy, you know, that was music too, and so that was a revelation for me. So sure.
That was amazing for me when I read it.
The name of that group is mm-hmm. Open Up Music.
Omi.music?
Open Up Music.
Open Up Music. All right. Yeah, that was big for me because I don't know if you had the same experience, but once I got my one-handed clarinet, I was determined that I was going to play Debussy. Okay, I never played Debussy on the two-handed clarinet. I don't know what made me think I was going to play it on the one-handed clarinet. But it's taken me, I'm only, what, almost 10 years, Shay, out of my stroke?
2016.
Yeah, so I'm getting 8 years. Yeah, and I kept thinking that I was going to regain this professional level of performance, and of course, I'm not required to in my job the way you are. They don't care if the music ed professor plays or not, but it's taken me a long time to realize that I don't have to regain those levels of performance, that just the fact that I play at all is enough some days.
Yeah, the challenge is part of the experience, as you know. But making music is the experience, and making is an activity. So it's the activity, making music, rather than putting the music on a CD and putting it out for sale.
That's nice too.
That's not for everybody. That's great too, and that's one way to communicate through music, but the most important one is what happens here and between me and yourself and my audience and the people on the stage with me, my pianist and my students. That's for me the most gratifying experience in music. Sure. is the interaction.
Sure. And that's actually why I actually invited Jay, because Jay and his program at Houston County has four bands that are tiered, and he has the same opportunities for students with disability as he has for students without. But due to the tiering of his bands, there are opportunities for people who want the performance outcome. His band, which band, Jay, just got back from New York this weekend?
My Wind Symphony.
They played in Carnegie Hall this weekend, so he definitely has the product for the people who want product, but he has other bands that don't product that hard for the people who want the social experience.
Yeah, I guess for me, what I have figured out over my career is that most likely less than 5% of the students I'll teach over 30 years are going to actually pursue music as a vocation. And once I came to that conclusion, it really changed the way I thought about my teaching. I think the experience and the making of music, like you said, Dr. Nab, about, you know, being part of the process, being in the moment, making music, creating, collaborating with your audience, with your fellow performers, I think that's much more important now than, you know, if every kid knows all 12 major scales and all three forms of the minors and can read, you know, in the key of F sharp all day long. I mean, I think those things are valuable and they're pedagogically sound, but I also think that you know, looking at my program, you know, I'm very fortunate. I have 360 students in my band program at a school with 2,100 students. I have a relatively large program, and I'm able to tier the ensembles so kids can plug in at whatever degree of intensity they want to, which I think I've learned over the years is that most of my band kids are more about the social aspect of being in the band than it ever has to do with the actual performance aspect. And that's not to say, like, my Wind Symphony, they're very dialed in to the music making part. They're the ones that audition for the Allstate bands and do all those things. But it also allows me the opportunity to make music accessible for students who maybe don't have the physical abilities to play whatever. But we handle that in a lot of different ways. The group auditions, you know, I have a group that's non-auditioned for people who just want to play. And then my other groups are auditioned so that they can plug in at whatever level they feel most comfortable, you know. And I tell parents, because parents are always like, well, why is that kid not in the top band? Well, you wouldn't put a ninth grader in AP calculus. This is where it's developmentally appropriate for them to be. But it also gives us the opportunity to allow students who may not be able to participate in music to have a place where they feel good about making music, where they feel safe, and they can participate at whatever intellectual or physical ability they have. And so that's something I'm really proud of with my program is that, you know, our school is the is considered the autism school for our system. All of the autism specialists are within our special ed program. And of course we have the MOID programs and those as well. But autism is a really important part of our school culture. And so to have a place and an environment where our autistic students can feel valued and flourish is really something that is crucial to the community that is my band program.
All right. And I'm sorry, Julie, I'm going clockwise around. You're the last one back to me. So your United Sound project, and as I understand from our conversation from January, you started from the perspective of trying to create opportunities for student mentors to develop and grow, and the people that you decided to allow them to mentor would be intellectually challenged students in music?
No.
Okay, no. Tell me what I did wrong.
No, I was just the band director who wanted to include everyone. And then I was teaching 7th and 8th grade at the time. Mm-hmm. I saw about 320 kids a day by myself with just those, you know, 12 to 14 year olds. Yep.
Sorry.
A lot of humans. You know, after a couple of years of getting my feet wet as a new teacher, I had said to my principal that, you know, anybody who wanted to take band could take band. And then I had the next year, and there were 92 people in the lower of the two 7th grade bands, and three of them had autism and two of them were non-speaking. And I was like, the answer is still yes, but I'm going to need some help. And it turned out that there wasn't any help. That's where United Sound grows from, is that, you know, if teachers need help, we would like to be that help. And yes, we accomplish it through the mentor system, because that's a way to have everyone grow and, you know, lots of hands on deck. As a teacher, you can't replicate yourself. Jay knows that.
Absolutely. Most definitely. Apologies for me having to switch. My MacBook decided to start dying, so I had to find the charger and plug it in very quickly. So apologies for that. But yeah, I mean, you absolutely, within a band program or an orchestra program, you know, sometimes you feel like you're on an island by yourself. And it's hard to make sure that every student gets that personal attention. Whether it's a program, like I taught private school for a number of years and a smaller program, and then you go to the larger program. But, you know, all kids need to know that you're a part of what they're experiencing. And you do feel like you're on your own island sometimes, and that there's no life raft or no one coming to save you.
And yes. And Julie, will you tell us more about how your students read, or do they have to read music to be in your band or orchestra program?
Each school is its own United Sound chapter entity, and they're all different as children can be. But we pair the students, three student mentors for each one new musician. So a lot of our students are reading music, and I was thinking there was going to be a book sitting right here, but there isn't. a lot of our students are reading music. We use foods to teach rhythm and color to teach pitch. But we have, you know, some students who, you know, don't read anything, and their mentors are, you know, whispering in their ear or hand over hand, or everyone, because we're talking about students with a higher degree of disability, higher needs, then when you have your own personal team, they can do whatever they need to do. So if you didn't actually need any of that and you can play out of a regular method book, wonderful. And, you know, all the way to the, like, let's play the cello together level of help. And every single group is as different as the child. So we're able to reach them in that way.
That's wonderful. I was so, like, a lot of the things I saw in your United Sound stuff is similar to what our music therapists do with students. Now, of course, the music therapists are working for more therapeutic goals, and you're working for educational goals, but the methods are very similar.
And we're working for social goals, actually, not even educational.
Sure, yes. And David, I know that you have replicated your one-hand saxophone, and you have kind of a scheme to get it into the hands of maybe students who have upper limb deficiencies and want to play the saxophone.
Well, yeah, we're working on that. The problem is, of course, the expense.
Certainly.
Instruments. I'm very interested in what Julie's doing. Julie, are you a software engineer, or how do you? I imagine many of your students are using digital devices or interfaces.
No, the only students that use digital devices are students that participate in a digital ensemble, where everyone else is using a digital instrument. So our goal is to change the environment to make it work for you and your disability, not to change, you know, so that if you're in a band, then these are the band instruments and which one would you like to play? We have every child choose every, you know, go through everything. That said, like book one for all of the band instruments only has three notes in it. So concert B flat, concert A, and concert G, except for saxophone and clarinet are playing DC and B flat. So everyone can use one hand. Most people can use either hand. And then you've got, you know, a quarter note, a half note, 2/8 notes, and a rest. So for a whole 60-page method book, which is the same as a regular method book, just a really gradual slope, right? As opposed to the steep slope that is how we start regular beginning band, beginning orchestra. So for our students, we do have, I can think of one darling girl here in Arizona. She wanted to play the saxophone. She only has use of one hand, and that hand is her, oh, no, she has use of both hands, but her fingers are like yay long. She wanted to play the saxophone. And so, it, you know, with her intellectual ability and everything else, they determined that it would be better for her to use the right hand so that she wouldn't be pushing the palm keys down. You know, because then the bars are right at her hand, and she could play the B, A, and the G, and I think they taught her, you know, C and C sharp. And then the mentors write a modified part. So it doesn't matter whether you're playing, you know, a grade 6 or a 0.5. I might only be playing B at just the right time, and then that's my authentic contribution. Where mm-hmm. someone else might know all the notes, and their mentors can write them a part, you know. Maybe right. They know all 12 notes, but they process slower, so they need one note every two measures. As long as the mentors, you know, write them a modified part that meets their playing ability, then they're playing those instruments. Does that make sense?
Yes. So the musicians with disabilities play a role in instrument selection, in their own instrument selection.
Absolutely. That's the first requirement, is that you have a petting zoo. I mean, if it's a guitar class, then your choice is guitar, because that's the class that you're joining. Right? If it's band, it's band instruments. And we even ask the teachers to hide the percussion during choose your instrument, not just like you do for any beginning band student, but the amount of implicit bias that is built by the time someone is 16 years old. I mean, the students, their parents, the teachers, like everyone will come in and say, oh, he can only, and we say, oh, that's great. But first let's try everything on the table, you know, and we have, it's like 16% choose to play percussion. Whereas when we have a child, when I had those three children in my seventh grade band, the only thing I could do in that environment with no help and so many humans was to put a pad on the drum so we couldn't hear what they were doing and to give them a drumstick. We see a person with a disability, we immediately hand them a drum. And playing drums is awesome. That's why there are so many drummers in the world. So even when we hide those instruments from our fifth graders or from our new musicians in United Sound, some still choose drums.
Yeah.
Because hitting things is fun. You know, playing drums is great, but many don't, right? You get a ton of saxophones and euphoniums because everybody sounds good in the euphonium at the beginning. You know, so many violins because it's little and cute and, you know, just all of these things. So we're modifying the instrument as itself so that, you know, it's very othering to be like, do you want to be in the orchestra? Here's your iPad. You're very different. Versus, you know, can you play the four open strings at just the right time? And then you're getting to do the real thing with everyone.
And you look the same.
From a level where you're putting your fingers down, wonderful. And if you just play D at just the right time forever, also wonderful. Right? The tuba's not playing the flute part. Everybody's got a modified part. We'll just modify the music and the instrument to where you are.
That is really wonderful.
Yeah, it's really fun. The guitar is the most modified instrument of our, like, pre-modified. We use a hair tie, not a rubber band, because it works much better, to dampen the three lowest strings, which gives you basically a ukulele, but high schools have guitars. but then you can play five chords with one finger, and you could play it, you know, on the tabletop like an auto harp or, you know, holding it or in any direction. But those five chords, you know, one finger at a time, except for E minor is no fingers. And you can play a lot of things if you know five chords. I mean,
that's wonderful.
I think it's important, you know, you were talking about how they play guitar that's a ukulele because that's what high schools or school programs have. I think it would be really helpful to have a resource for us who don't have the additional help on how to do some of those modifications. You know, the tricks that you know to make those instruments more accessible. So, you know, we don't have kids just playing percussion. I have a student of mine who came to me, had done exactly what you said. She was placed on triangle in middle school band. And she played all 4 years for me. And if I had told her by the time she got to me that she couldn't play triangle anymore, it would have ended badly. That was her instrument. And like, yeah, she loved it. But totally. It was most likely because of the same thing you said, in a regular classroom environment, there wasn't, we don't know those things that we can do. I have seen some things lately in like the Facebook band directors groups of instrument modifications we made. You know, people who have physical disabilities, like you said, the girl had small fingers, adding paddles on some of the keys to make them more reachable and more accessible. But I think that would be a great resource to have for people who are teaching without any kind of assistance that do want to make their classrooms accessible. Because so I think it's so important.
We provide that resource through the United Sound chapters.
Perfect.
Many of our schools don't pay anything. And then, you know, it's here is the buffet of how we can help you. And this is why I say every chapter is like an island unto itself, because it's like, oh, I need these two things. I'm good there. You know, so each teacher is choosing their own specifics from what we offer. We do require the peer mentoring component because I just personally am so, I was thinking about this, David, when you were talking in your initial component, because I had my most beloved college professor. His name was Barry Wells, and he was our practicum professor, you know, and you spend, I don't know, 8 hours a week with this one person. And we just adored one another, but we also loved to not agree, you know, and he was just, and I was attending, you know, Arizona State on a full ride saxophone scholarship. So I could play at a high level, but band for me was far more a social experience than anything else, right? The place where you belong. And I wanted everyone to belong. And he was, you know, always pushing like the aesthetic. And I'm like, I don't even care. You know, being good is really fun and that will come. But if you're safe and you have friends and you can be your weird you and, you know, your band is your place, music is your place. And so for me, that's where United Sound comes from, is like, how do we make it so everybody fits? And Jay, you're already doing that. You're just not doing it with as much help as you maybe want to.
Well, and I think it's important. I think you're exactly right. I think that, and especially in high school band, it's become so competitive that we don't realize all the time that, you know, if a kid only plays an F sharp every four measures because that's where it's attainable for them, that that's okay too. We don't have to play every note on the page every time. And I mean, we do that for our non special needs students. We modify parts all the time. There's a clarinet lick that can't be played. Hey, why don't you just play the first note of each of those four note 16th note runs? You know, because we're being evaluated.
You are pulling yourself out a little bit as the quality teacher that you are, though, because not everyone is modifying music all the time, right? They are saying, here's the bar and you must jump over it. And if you can't, I'm going to make you uncomfortable so that you will self-select yourself out of my program, right? And we lose a lot of kids when we don't have teachers that are doing what you're doing just by
and
now.
That's so opposite what I think, like you said. You know, how many of our students really and truthfully, when we're honest with ourselves, are in it because they're looking for that deep aesthetic moment as a ninth grader in high school band? There are some, don't get me wrong.
I have one of those children in my home, but he's, you know, I don't recognize that behavior.
but like you tell the kids that you're going to play Lincolnshire Posy and they're like, okay, you tell them that you're getting pizza at the football game on Friday night, and they lose their minds.
Or that they're going to make friendship for each other.
Right. And you know, it's not our goals aren't necessarily their goals. And so we have to, I think, do a better job in education of meeting our students where those goals are. You know, how can we get them to a proficient or even a very high level while tricking them? I use the term, and Tina and I talk about this all the time. You know, it's all smoke and mirrors. You know, like if I'm choosing literature for my band, I pick five pieces that are educationally sound that I know are going to be good for them. And then I give them the choice, which is really just the illusion of choice.
It is.
You know, so it's those kind of things that, you know, I think more needs to be said about making it accessible and less about, you know, it's got to be note perfect every time. I've been a trumpet player for 30 years. I have never played a performance in any possible way that has been note perfect every second I was in the performance. There's always going to be something that I wish I had done better. I mean, and I think I think you can do that with your students without compromising the integrity of the music or without compromising, you know, intensity is not the right word, but your standard, you know, for what good music making is. And I think that's important. I think our students, at least my students, I think appreciate that greatly because they do feel that they can be their most authentic selves. You know, you got the super serious ones that are going to go study at conservatory. I've got sax players that are going to Interlochen in the summer, all the way down to the kid who's still trying to figure out how to put the head joint on his flute right. You know, and that's, you know, we have a seat for all of you.
Yes.
And I think that's, you know, I think that's one of the things that this conversation is important, because all of you doesn't mean all of the regular ed kids who can play through the beginning band book or at least parts of it correctly. I think it needs to be an environment where we're inclusive to whomever wants to choose music for whatever reason.
Jay, you talked about two things that reminded me of two different things. One is the idea of social reasons for becoming a musician in the first place. And I remember that, you know, being a trumpet player wasn't your goal whenever you started in seventh grade.
No, not at all. My middle school didn't start band until seventh grade. We took the Selmer, or the Gordon music aptitude test in sixth grade. I think the high score on it's like a 120. I scored a 4. I had to beg the band director to please let me be in band. And my reasons were simple. I didn't want to take PE anymore. And if you were in band, you didn't have to take PE in middle school. I got tired of getting pushed into lockers and the locker room changing. I was done with it. So my reasons for joining band were the social reasons. I wanted to not take PE. I wanted to go to Disney World, and my parents were highly averse to theme parks, and I knew the band took trips every couple of years. And I wasn't an athlete. I wanted a high school letter jacket, and band kids got letter jackets. And those were solely my reasons for being in the band. And somewhere along the way, I figured out how to play the trumpet. And that's, you know, I think about those every year when I go talk to my eighth graders. And when I did my middle school recruiting, it's like, there are a lot of me's sitting out there right now that need this desperately. And it has nothing to do with being able to play a nice concert B flat in tune with great tone.
The other thing, Jay, I was thinking specifically about your trip to New York this past weekend and the fact that you got invited to perform at a band. Which band invitational?
This was the National Band and Orchestra Festival at Carnegie Hall. Okay. And I was honored to accept the invitation. It was a really great experience for my kids. But
what was the thing that your children were excited about? They weren't excited about the performance. They were excited about something else.
We went and saw Wicked. We did a dinner cruise in the bay where they got to dance and all of that stuff. Like, what'd y'all think of the concert? It's great. What time do we eat? I mean, that's how, you know, this is my most advanced kids. And so I think, Julie, you're right. I think it's important that we realize, I got in band for, it sounds like, the same reasons you did. And it had nothing to do with being a world-class musician. Mm-hmm. Along the way, I developed that awareness that mm-hmm. that was an important part and something that I needed, but not all of our students are going to feel that way. I tell my kids this, and I tell my band parents this, and when I do my, hey, you should be in high school band, we talk a lot about experience over everything else, because, like I said, I'm not necessarily training the next world-class musicians, although I work hard at that too, but I know that in 15 years, 20 years, my current band students are going to have kids that come home with that sixth grade band letter. And I want their experience to have been such with me that there's no question that they want their child to at least try music. I don't ever want to do anything that's going to prevent that and for perpetuating our craft and perpetuating music making and all those things. So I think that what you're doing with United Sound is important, because that's a whole category of students that has been excluded from this for so long.
It's an untapped resource, I think, yeah.
I will say, and again, it looks different everywhere, but the majority of our chapters meet as a club. Mm-hmm. So the new musicians are then only having band once or twice a week after school or during club time, or it varies from school to school. At the beginning, when United Sound was an idea, I had some pushback of like, oh, well, that's not inclusion. And the, you know, my answer now is, you're right, it's not. This is reverse inclusion, right? We were creating a special education music class, and we're including the mentors in this type of music. But I 100% agree with everything that you just said, but I think also that our children need desperately the opportunity to serve and to help one another. And I have three teenagers. It's really hard to find authentic service opportunities these days, right? Like, we can do like a family thing. We can go to, you know, Feed My Starving Children and pack things, and it bonds us as a family, but we don't know who we're packing food for. I'm not saying we shouldn't go to that, because, you know, I do. It's wonderful. Mm-hmm. You know, we can pick up trash or we can do something, but there's those relationship-based experiences change who you are forever. And in addition to being that parent who will decide whether your children can join band, mm-hmm. we also want that parent who is, you know, the manager of the Walgreens or, you know, something, the hiring person, to see that person with a disability as a whole person and potentially employable, right? Like, we have band is the very best thing. Band, orchestra, choir, music is the best thing on any campus every time. But if we can also infuse it with this, you know, if we can use this best thing and infuse a service opportunity. And really, the service goes both ways. You know, we love to like think that, oh, we're serving, and you can watch our new musicians do just as much serving back the other way. But like, the community engagement and the just feeling of belonging and feeling like, you know, you did something wonderful today really changes, I think, the high school experience and middle school and college. We have 7 universities. But, you know, like to me, it's the power couple of like service and music where we're having a relationship.
You can hear the rest of this webinar conversation at marchingartseducation.com. There's a link to that webinar where this podcast is located at the Marching Roundtable website and YouTube channel. And you can find many other conversations and interviews about including disabled students in our music programs at marchingartseducation.com.
This podcast is sponsored by FJM, Fred J. Miller Incorporated. FJM is the leader in marching arts uniform manufacturing and continues to lead the charge through groundbreaking design, superior service, and over 60 years of industry innovation. The Cesario collection of marching band uniforms is 100% machine washable, includes a limited lifetime warranty, and makes the fitting process a breeze with their adjust-a-cuff and adjust-a-hem technology. Now is the perfect time to create a new image for your program. Chat with a live FJM representative or schedule your complimentary consultation today at fjminc.com/roundtable. That's fjminc.com/roundtable. Fred J. Miller Incorporated, family owned and operated since 1960.